It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, a new mural being created for downtown Wausau deals with the issues of addiction and recovery. We'll find out how the community's voices shaped the design and how people can take part in the painting process this summer. Right now, happy first Monday of the month. That means it's time for Mondays with Mike. Each time, one of the Mikes here at Wisconsin Public Radio, either Director Mike Crane or Content Director Mike Arnold, swings by Central Time or the Morning Show to talk about what's going on with WPR. This time it's us, and we've got Mike Crane. We're going to talk about some special programming over the next several weeks, a big 40th anniversary event for one of our weekend shows, staffing changes, and more. And you can join in with your questions and comments at 800-642-1234. What do you want to hear more or less of? Any particular show you'd like WPR to carry? What questions do you have about what we do, why we do it, or the way we do it? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Mike, welcome back.
It's great to be here, and always love the opportunity to hear from our listeners and to find out just how avid they are about listening, not just to their public radio station, but to podcasts and streams from other public radio stations. So sometimes it's even a journey of discovery for us right here inside the radio to learn what's out there that you're interested in.
Yeah, and in general, we're making a push, Mike, to hear more about what people listen to and why, including our current lineup, but as you say, not limited to it. What do we want to hear from people?
Yeah, we want to hear the things that you think are really great that we ought to investigate. Or, you know, it is actually important. If there's something you don't like, It does help us to think through what changes we might make in the future.
Yeah, so if you have concerns about any show apart from Central Time, let us know. Or if you like a show, like, say, Central Time, you can let us know about that, too.
Yeah. Perfect.
And right now, you can call in at 800-642-1234, but you can call anytime if you have thoughts or questions for WPR. Our audience services department is great. You can call them at 800-747-7444 or email listener@WPR.org. Now, speaking of programming, Mike, we just ended this series that the news team took the lead on, High Tolerance. Talk about that.
So that was our series about our complicated relationship with alcohol here in our state. And we got a lot of listener comments. Some of it, of course, very appreciative because there were a lot of really great stories in terms of what you could learn from them, but some concerned about how some of the pieces seem to be glorifying alcohol, and there's a lot to not be worth glorifying. We really tried to do something that I think is so public radio, which is to acknowledge that our state's relationship with alcohol is complicated. That's what public radio is good at, and so it is the state, the only state we learned, that basically makes the first drunk driving offense hardly worth talking about. Yet it's also a place where there's a ton of binge drinking. It's the place where there's a lot of pride in the alcohol that we create, for a long time now, breweries and now distilleries as well. And it's the place where, and we got to tell these stories, where horrible things have happened because of alcohol. And it's all in there. We hope that we kind of dance that line correctly. And so that was the purpose, was telling a complicated story over the course of a couple of weeks.
And I'm sure we'll follow up on these issues, both on our talk shows here and in the news department over the coming months. People can listen to our series, High Tolerance. You can hear all those stories and a lot of visuals, too, at WPR.org/alcohol. Moving on to another Wisconsin Life special now, Mike, Classroom Frequency Student Voices from Wisconsin. Tell us about that.
Yes, you know, we really do love to work with students and meet students all the time, but it's rare that we have the chance to work so closely with them. So what we did is Maureen McCollum, the producer of Wisconsin Life's radio series, joined up with students from the Monona Grove Liberal Arts Charter School to create a radio program that reflects their interests, or really a podcast that will happen to broadcast. And so they've got that together. It's going to be on the Ideas Network and our NPR News and Classical Network a bunch of times. The first opportunity here on the Ideas Network is Sunday, June 9th, so this coming Sunday at 4 p.m. And it's the stories that the kids wanted to tell about family and music and school, and Maureen is joined by teacher Ian Lowe to tell those stories with the kids.
All right, we've got that to look forward to. And another special during Pride Month, Mike, a different kind of coming out, a Nancy Pride special. What are we going to hear on that, Mike?
Well, so that's, let me give you the time, too. It's Tuesday, June 18th at 8 p.m., and it's a way to celebrate LGBTQ Pride with a critically acclaimed podcast about the experience. One of the things that they talk about is how coming out is taking a risk and sharing something that's deeply personal with another person or with family or friends. And we'll hear three different kinds of coming out stories. And that's, again, a different kind of coming out, a Nancy Pride special, Tuesday, June 18th at 8 p.m.
All right, a couple more programs I want to touch on, Mike. July 4th, the Capitol steps are back.
Yeah, they're a lot of fun. They poke fun at everybody in politics, and their Politics Takes a Holiday program. That's going to be 5 o'clock on July 4th. And so we encourage you, if you'd like a little political fun, to go ahead and listen.
And then some Big River radio waves right after that? Is
that's
that right?
Right. It's a midsummer celebration. This is the Big River Radio Wave. It's a live show that they do on what I sometimes think of as the west coast of Wisconsin, along the river there. And that's in Alma. And they have guests including Wisconsin cellist Ed Willett of Tent Show Radio fame, and La Crosse area acoustic musicians John Smith, Dan Sobranek, and Larry Dalton, and more. And so that's coming up Thursday, July 4th at 6 p.m.
Talking to WPR Director Mike Crane. It's Mondays with Mike, and you can join in with your questions or comments about Wisconsin Public Radio at 800-642-1234. We'll bring on some callers now. Tom starts us off in Nina. Tom, hi.
Good afternoon. The reason I'm calling, and I don't want to paint with too broad a brush, but over the last several days, a couple of times it's come up with the way things have been reported, this in particular regarding disaster funding. Last week, the House had like a pro forma session, and to get it through, they needed unanimous consent. And it was kind of, I think it was brought up three different days. Each day there was a Republican that did not want unanimous consent. But when it was broadcast, it was, we can't get things through Washington, or this morning on the news it was conservatives. And I really think precise language about what party is holding up important legislation is, I just think it's, if... The vagueness of it helps the people that are just throwing sand in the gears.
Mm-hmm. Tom, thanks for the call. Mike?
Yeah, there are a couple of different things that might be going on there. And one is that because newscasts happen every hour, they do try to rewrite things a bit. And what they may be losing is that precision, because certainly the idea of our newscast writing, whether it's national or local, is to be accurate. And so another thing that might be going on is, as often happens with legislative stuff, there might be the story that it's being told, and there's also backstories. The problem is if the reporters aren't telling those backstories, then you don't get to know the full truth. And so that's something we certainly should be keeping in mind. And thanks, Tom, for those comments.
Tom, thanks for the call. Going out to Louise in Dodgeville. Louise, hi.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. I was wondering about shows that are broadcast on both the classical station and the news station at the same time. Simply Folk, for instance, I'm a big fan, but wondering if there's an opportunity for new programming to be added instead of playing one show on both stations. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay, thanks, Louise. This is a question that comes up a lot. One of the things that is never evident when you're in your car or in your house listening to the radio is that the WPR networks are very different in terms of the size of the broadcast circles. And so I'd say a long time ago we developed a couple of habits that may be worth examining. As a for instance, WPR has one station in Milwaukee, and so we wanted to make sure that Higher Ground, which is otherwise heard on the News and Classical Network, is heard in Milwaukee. So it's on Saturday nights on WHAD in Milwaukee. And the same thing, Simply Folk, was heard only there, so it was on that network. But those kind of things, I have to say, it feels like what we refer to it as is the Manhattan Project, to figure out a way to unwind and reconnect all of those things in the most sensible way. The other habit we developed, and this was probably when A Prairie Home Companion was super popular, is that we wanted to make sure it was absolutely positively available to anyone. And so we were running that on both networks as well. Probably in this day and age, with everything available as a podcast, it would be worth reexamining. Our puzzle would always be, if we choose one network, which one? If you happen to look at the coverage maps that are deep inside of WPR.org, you'd see why we feel it's a bit of a puzzle. But thank you for the thought, and we definitely do think about that a lot.
And hey, thanks for the call, Louise. Speaking of Simply Folk, they've got a little shindig coming up. I'm not just making up the word. It's actually called the Simply Folk Shindig.
We've been calling that the sort of annual party the shindig for a while, but this is an extra big one,
right?
Because it's our 40th anniversary of broadcasting Simply Folk. We've had a number of wonderful hosts mm-hmm. over the years, and Dan Robinson is our now wonderful host, who'll be on stage and welcoming Grammy-nominated musicians Dom Flemons and Mary Gaucher, along with a Madison favorite, Chris Plata. And that's this Friday evening. And it's over at the Memorial Union in their wonderful theater. And so if you haven't gotten tickets yet, you can still get them, and you can find out more about it at WPR.org/presents.
It's the June edition of Mondays with Mike. We're talking about all things Wisconsin Public Radio with director Mike Crane. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question or comment about WPR? Tell us what you like or dislike about what you hear. You just want to know why things work the way they do. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or tweet us at Central Time WPR. We'll pick up a conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, it's the June edition of Mondays with Mike. WPR director Mike Crane is here to take your questions and comments about WPR. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234 with your feedback, comments, questions, whatever you got. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. We'll go back to your calls now. Jay is with us in Stevens Point. Jay, hi.
Hey, guys. I just had the idea that it would be a lot easier to listen to parts of Central Time if in your top-of-the-hour teaser you would list the stories coming up in order that they're coming up, so that I could listen to part of the BBC, what they've got going on, and then tune back in to you to catch the one I really want to hear rather than have to sit through all the other things that I'm not all that interested in.
Gotcha, Jay. Thanks for the call. So that's it. I do a billboard right at the beginning of the show where I list all the stuff. And yeah, I usually do it, and there's no science behind this. I do it kind of, the top news story, that's what I mentioned first, and then some of the other stuff after that. I could do it chronologically. I don't know, but I just want to trick Jay into listening the whole time.
That's right.
No, I'm kidding. Well, I'm happy if you're listening to the BBC. That's still our other network.
Yeah, that's right. I think both approaches are good. Generally, the headlines are something we don't necessarily want to list every single thing, but that fights your purpose, Jay. And sorry about that. I am glad that you're going back and forth, though. Yeah, that's awesome.
Two pretty good networks. Mm-hmm. Thanks a lot for calling in, Jay. Let's go to Nancy now in Milwaukee. Nancy, hello.
Hello. I have discovered that 1A would be available 5 days a week. So I am hoping that you will consider taping Science Friday when it is available to you, and showing that to us, or I should say presenting it to us on Saturday mornings, so that we could have wonderful Joshua Johnson and his 1A program on 5 days a week. And I'm sure that many people who work have never explored the delights of Science Friday, but if you played it to us on Saturday morning, then they would be able to hear all these wonderful scientific discoveries that they may not even be aware of.
Nancy, thanks. 1A every day, Sci-Fry Saturday.
Yeah, it's funny. When they switched over, when the original pairing of NPR's Talk of the Nation and NPR's Talk of the Nation Science Friday, when Talk of the Nation went away, they debated whether to make their name a little more generic than Friday. And I think they wanted to hold on to that broadcast slot because they refused to change it. And they thought, we might be hesitant to put it on Saturday or Sunday for that reason. And Yes, that's a consideration, but also it just it had such wonderful response that when we added 1A, we decided to hold on to Science Friday, as I think a lot of stations did. This is the eternal dilemma. We were talking about this in a very different context the other day, that whenever we invent a new radio program, in order to share it with people on the radio, we have to cancel something else. And that always is a challenge to make the right decision. It's one of the reasons we actually love the idea of listening to archives online and podcasting and all that, because it gives you almost an endless supply of great listening. And so I remember just the other day I was showing a friend how she can get podcasts on her iPhone. It's like, it's right here. You can get it. And you can get podcast catchers on pretty much any phone. So that's another alternative. Don't know if we'll change our minds on that, Nancy, but thanks for the comment.
Thanks for calling in, Nancy, at 800-642-1234. Mike Crane, WPR director, is with us for this month's edition of Mondays with Mike. Let's go to Devin in Milwaukee now. Devin, hi.
Hi. Oh, my gosh, this is so cool. I've never been on this. Okay.
It's pretty cool,
it never
right?
stops
being on the radio.
Cool, Devin,
yeah.
So go for it.
So you know how you do like a rebroadcast of Central Time?
Yeah.
So you do it at 7, and then I think it starts at 3, right?
That's
right.
3 to 5, 5 to 7.
Yep.
So you say that people can still call in on both of them. How do they know? Because I'm sure there may be people that call in on the rebroadcast.
Yep.
Like, what do you guys do for that?
Yeah, it's a wonderful question, mm-hmm. and in fact, I'm often tricked by it, and I work inside the radio. Now, I don't call in because I can just walk down the hall and talk to folks, but actually, a lot of our call-in shows are exactly like that, going way back to maybe one of the first prominent call-out shows nationally was Car Talk, and we do that with Dr. Zorba as well, and with the repeat of Garden Talk on Saturdays, and the same thing with the Gradens with People's Pharmacy. So typically what happens with these different shows is if you call in at the later time, there'll be a message there that lets you know that you can no longer get in, or a busy signal if anyone remembers those.
Right.
That's just the opportunity to still broadcast it has seemed worth it, and a lot of people tune in those 2 hours as well.
Right. But yeah, if you were to call, you'd get a message that says this is a repeat. And I think there's a thought, we could put in a tag or something like that, but that's kind of then you're trying to insert a thing in. It gets a little weird audio-wise, Devin. But thank you. Welcome to the airwaves. I'm very glad you made your first call in. That's wonderful.
The other thing that is a challenge is any kind of what we call a disclaimer. So something that you put, say, at the beginning of broadcast saying, this is sensitive material or this is a repeat or anything like that is only heard by the people that encounter it right at that time. And if other people don't encounter it, they still don't know. So it's always a bit of a puzzle for us.
Yep. Thanks, Devin, for the call. Eddie joins us now in Green Bay. Eddie, hi.
Hey, how y'all doing? Glad to be on. Wanted to ask you a little bit about diversity and diversity programming. Wondering if there's someone specific on staff assigned to looking at developing, creating, offering programming specifically as it relates to diversity here in Wisconsin, which is a state, as y'all know, is changing dramatically. And some of the stats, particularly around African Americans, are just really not very good. And so just wondering if there's a way that this platform could address that. You mentioned Dr. Zorba. I love that show, but I called into him just asking him something. The information, but sometimes it didn't seem to pertain to folks of color or African Americans. So that's my question to y'all, is programmatically around folks creating some programs as it relates to diversity.
Gotcha, Eddie. Thanks for calling in, Mike.
And actually, Eddie, it has become not just a concern of a person on our staff, but the concern of our whole staff, because we're really recognizing that if we don't represent the full breadth of who is Wisconsin, African Americans, Native Americans, Hmong, whatever it might be, as well as white people, Latinos, I can keep listing, of course. But the thing that we're very clear on is exactly the kind of thing you're talking about. There are special parts of news, for instance, in health for people of color, including some very disturbing statistics we learn about. So we're doing a bunch of things. One is to try to make sure by counting it and measuring it for ourselves to invite more people of color to be on the broadcast, to hire more people of color. And in general, diversity is so much a part of our plan that we've got a whole Wisconsin Public Media-wide diversity action plan that we're working on for sort of version two, because it's such a clear concern for us.
Eddie, thanks a lot for the call. Let's go to Michael in Kaukauna now. Michael, hi.
Hello. I just had a question about, in modern-day world, when you already have cell phone companies broadcasting, streaming versions of WPR, why not just drop all the transmitters across the state and let the cell phone companies do it with the free app that you have and save some money?
Michael, thanks for the call. Down with the transmitters, Mike.
Down with the transmitters, yes. So it's not actually free. We do pay for sending out the streams on a per-user basis, but it's also not that expensive. And the basic reason, and it's a puzzle for us, is that many more people use the radio than use streaming, even now, as popular as it seems to be. It's orders of magnitude more people that use the radio. So we're going to probably stick with it until that shifts. And then we're left with this dilemma, which is, it tends to be in rural areas that internet connection is the worst. That means that that transmitter and tower that costs the same in Eagle River as it does in Madison is a lot more expensive per user. And so we're trying to figure that out, and we haven't. That's why we do both.
Thanks, Michael. And the concept is we're trying to cover as much of Wisconsin as we humanly can, whatever technology we're using.
Exactly right.
Well, Mike, we're just about out of time. It sure flies on by. Anything you're looking forward to? Let's briefly construction going on here.
Quick thoughts there. So we're in a different room than we usually are for the Ideas Network, because we're rebuilding our studios. Today, there was a lot of hammering and stuff.
Drilling.
And we're going to have that for another couple of weeks. The way that's mainly manifested itself on air is occasional problems, but we're working through them, and we've got just a terrific crew that's working on it. At the end of the movie, I hope by September or so, we should have brand new studios here in Madison.
And people in many places will be able to hear a difference, I think, is the way it's been explained to me.
Yep, that's right. And over time, we'll be rebuilding the entire network infrastructure.
Well, Mike, thanks a lot for coming by. Flies by every time.
It does.
That's Mike Crane, director of Wisconsin Public Radio. We talk to them the first Monday of every month here on Central Time or The Morning Show. Coming up after the news, we'll find out how people recovering from addiction helped design a new mural that's going up in downtown Wausau. I'm Rob Ferret. There's more to come on Central Time here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, Democrats met in Milwaukee over the weekend for the state party's annual convention. We'll find out what happened with WPR's state capitol reporter. First, downtown Wausau will be getting its largest public mural this fall. It highlights an issue that's impacted thousands of Wisconsin families, the struggle of addiction, and the road to recovery. People in the recovery process were a key part of designing the mural. And this summer, Wausau area residents will have a chance to grab a brush and do some painting themselves before the final product is displayed on the city's Frontier Building. Christy Keel is the president of Rise Up Central Wisconsin, the nonprofit community arts group behind the project. Christy, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you, Rob, for having me.
Christy, I understand Rise Up has been around for a couple of years now. Before we get into this mural project, can you tell us what the group's all about?
Yeah, Rise Up started as a grassroots collaboration of individuals and different organizations, including the health department, Aspirus Hospital, various individuals that are activists in our community, and we started it in July of 2017. Really, we mirrored it off of a program out in Philadelphia called the Porchlight Initiative. And it works to, the idea behind it is that participatory, community-driven art can really foster resilience, equity, and health promotion. So that's the basis of it.
And this mural you'll be producing this summer focuses on recovery from addiction. How did you settle on that theme?
Well, really when Rise Up started, we always wanted to have at least one project focused on recovery. Given the state of the Marathon County area, as well as one of the highest addiction rates in the state of Wisconsin, as it is a rampant issue nationwide, we knew that we needed to find out-of-the-box thinking ways of solving the problem of addiction. And really, WASA loves art, and we're all about having all these art festivals and art around the community, great museums, and it's a great way to take the taboo topic of addiction and connecting it with art.
And a lot of times when you think of a public art project, you think, okay, they hire an artist, the artist comes in and designs a thing and then does the thing. But I understand that people in the recovery process actually played a part in designing the overall mural.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what's so cool about the process of that we go through. We have a three-step process. It starts with engaging the participants. So since January of 2018, we've had artists working with participants in Lakeside Recovery, which is an inpatient substance abuse treatment program here in Wausau. And they've been meeting every week, doing various types of poetry writing, vision boards, painting portraits, all sorts of types of art ways of mediums. And through that process, our artists have gathered consistent themes that have come up, and they created the design from those themes. It's kind of a back-and-forth process with the participants over time, and we came to this great this great image that we just recently released last Thursday. So it is a very engaged process with the participants themselves and not necessarily just the artists creating that design.
Talking to Christy Keel with Rise Up Central Wisconsin about a new mural project on addiction recovery in the Wausau area, created with the help of local residents, going to be painted with the help of local residents. We'll get into that. But Christy, one thing I love about this, as I understand it, it's going to go, I think, viewing from left to right, more muted colors, more black and white, and get more colorful as you turn to the other direction. And that is partly because one of those themes you just talked about that came out came from people who were going through recovery.
Exactly. Yeah, the mural is titled Now I See in Color. And it was very evident, it came up multiple times from individuals, that when they are living in the throes of addiction, it is as though they are living in the absence of color, so in black and white. And you'll see in the mural image that on the left-hand side, you have the rough images, a dark bird, dying flowers, some emotional faces that are black and white, as well as an individual down in the depths, and he is in a shadow. And then as you go across the image, you'll see more and more color come to light. And one participant has actually explained it as though it took months and months of being in recovery till they actually started seeing vibrant color again.
Amazing. And people will get to participate in the painting of this, even if they're not talented painters. If they're like me and can't really paint, people can still get involved.
Exactly. Yeah. So through our last stage, the generate phase, our artists put the mural in 5x5 foot sections on this kind of canvas paper. And we take that around to the community and have community paint days. Some of those will be down by the 400 block during the Chalk Fest time period, also within the recovered community at various meetings that they hold, and ending up during Artrageous Weekend in September. And it really is a large paint by number. And so anybody of any age level or any artistic ability is capable of painting with us.
And then talk about, Christy, where this is going to end up and where we'll be able to see this.
Yeah, so we were Frontier Communications was generous enough to donate their building. The side of their building faces the 400 block, which is our area downtown that's, you know, used for various musical events and other types of community events. And it's a large 40x80 foot canvas. It's really an aluminum siding that's just been kind of sitting there with nothing, and it's a perfect place to put this canvas so that the whole community can see it, and it's on display for all.
What kind of response from the people who participate in the design process have you gotten? How have they talked about being part of this?
Well, we have several individuals who, even though they're out of currently the Lakeside Recovery place, they've actually been coming back to our project on Friday mornings, and they have just loved being a part of it. And really, it highlights the whole idea that the opposite of addiction is connection. And that's what Rise Up really wants to be for these individuals. And one participant in particular has found it just to be a light to come every Friday. It's something he looks forward to. He's really thrilled to have their story told to the whole community, and it just gives them a sense of self-worth, you know, that their story really matters. And that's been really an overwhelming theme that we've heard from the participants.
You've used the word community many times just in this short conversation, Christy, and that seems like it's at the heart of this, that addiction can be something that's isolating, that separates people from friends, maybe even family. This is a call to bring them back in.
Exactly. Yep. And really, when someone sits in isolation, that can just fester more and more addiction. And so we hope that through Rise Up, we can together as a community address the issue and help to heal, strengthen, and unify all the participants and the community.
Now, I should ask, it's hard to describe art on the radio sometimes. Can you give us a little broad overview of what we see, what we're going to see on this mural?
Yeah. Well, on the left-hand side, as I suggested, there's some darkness, and there's some very large faces at the top that show kind of this idea of struggle, as well as an individual who is at the bottom of a chain of people, and he's really in darkness. As you go to the right, you see this chain, support chain, becoming more and more colorful. So it's more and more individuals that are kind of getting more and more color as we go. And the chain really represents the changes that someone can see while they're in recovery, going away from the isolation to being connected to others and really having that support system that resembles the support system there. You also can see in the background Granite Peak, which is a very common viewpoint in Wausau, and some balloons that represent not only our festivals that we have within the community, but also the idea of rising up from addiction. And there's also just on the right-hand side where there's more color, a lot more representation of growth and vitality, like a dove in the sky, some musical notes, nature, flowers that are actually blooming and showing that new life, and a butterfly. So there's lots of things. There will be many, many hidden images as well as quotes that the participants have created. And so it's an image that we hope that people will come time and time again to view, and we'll see a new thing every time.
Christy, we'll leave it there. Thank you so much for sharing this with us today.
Great. Wonderful. Thank you.
That's Christy Keel, president of Rise Up Central Wisconsin. She was with us to talk about the group's work in putting together a mural in downtown Wausau dealing with the recovery process from drug and alcohol addiction. There will be painting events where members of the public and people in the recovery community can join in actually bringing this mural to life. Coming up, we'll take a look at the state Democratic Party convention this weekend and what party leaders are saying about the upcoming 2020 election campaign. Stay with us here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, 1 minute they were watching an episode of The Bachelorette. The next minute, their local meteorologist was telling them about a tornado warning. They weren't happy and let him know. He wasn't happy with them and let them know. We'll talk to a TV meteorologist in Wisconsin about how these decisions about severe weather coverage are made. First, Wisconsin Democrats have a new chairman running the state party. Ben Wickler's election came as Wisconsin Democrats gathered in Milwaukee this weekend for their annual state party convention. Here's Wickler celebrating some of the party's recent successes.
And that became the rocket fuel for the 2018 campaigns. Tammy Baldwin's landslide, Tony Evers, and Mandela Barnes ending the Scott Walker dark ages because you fought.
WPR's state capitol reporter Laurel White was in Milwaukee covering the convention this weekend. Laurel, thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Rob.
Well, the last few years have been like good news, bad news for Wisconsin Democrats. Bad news losing the presidency in 2016. Good news from their perspective. They get the governor's office, Tammy Baldwin, reelected. Now their judge isn't elected. What was the mood of the crowd after all that?
You know, Rob, it was actually, despite that recent Supreme Court race that didn't go their way, it was a pretty jubilant crowd at the convention this weekend. I think a lot of people were focusing on those 2018 statewide victories, getting the governor's office for the first time in 8 years, you know, winning the state treasurer's office, preserving that office. That was a fight. The attorney general's office, of course. So it was really kind of, in my estimation, sort of a victory lap for Wisconsin Democrats. It was really kind of an upbeat tone throughout the convention this weekend.
That said, I imagine they're also looking ahead at 2020, another Supreme Court race, and then, of course, all congressional seats, a lot of legislative seats, and the presidential race coming up.
Absolutely. So I actually thought it was pretty interesting that Governor Evers took his time on stage. He was, of course, the keynote address and what everything ramped up to on Saturday to talk about the 2020 elections. He didn't talk too much about, you know, the debate over the state budget and the Capitol right now, which is, of course, taking a lot of bandwidth in state politics. And there's a lot of negativity there, you know, a lot of push and pull between him and Republicans. He talked about what Democrats need to do to have a good showing in 2020. And he had two lessons, really, that he said he took away from his race. He said we need to unite as a party, even if we have a pretty crowded primary, which, of course, Democrats are looking at in the presidential race, much like they did in his gubernatorial race. And he said we need to sort of change the way we talk about things. We need to focus on policy, we need to focus on issues and not get down, he said, quote, down in the mud with Republicans if they want to start sort of lobbing personal attacks. He said that's something they've done in the past and something Democrats shouldn't engage in.
That said, did any of the speakers at the convention get down in the mud at all, either targeting President Trump or Wisconsin Republicans?
They sure did. So most notably, I think Congresswoman Gwen Moore took the stage. She got a really warm welcome from the crowd. She actually danced onto the stage and then danced back off after her remarks. But a little bit into her speech, she said, I'm going to do some Trump dumping during this speech. So she was very open about the fact that she was going to be really critical of the president. And she laid out some things that she thinks he's been doing incorrectly in office. She said he actually needs to learn to conduct himself like 4- and 5-year-olds learn to conduct themselves in kindergarten. She referenced that book, Everything I Need to Know I Learned in Kindergarten. So she was kind of having a little bit of fun, or maybe a lot of fun, on stage doing a little bit of mudslinging on Saturday.
Talking to WPR's own Laurel White about this weekend's state Democratic convention. Now, there's a new state Democratic leader. What do we know about the party's new chair?
So the party's new chair is Ben Wickler. He's a native Wisconsinite. He was born and raised in Madison, but moved to Washington, D.C. As a young professional. He most recently worked as a national activist for the group MoveOn.org. He was a director there. He had a really high-profile podcast for the group. But he came back to Wisconsin within the past year or so, fairly recently, said he wanted to put down roots here. He's got 3 kids, and ran on a platform of uniting the party and, you know, kind of using cutting-edge digital strategies to move things forward. What he really pushed for in his convention address, they give speeches after they're nominated and before the vote is held for the new chair. And he said what Democrats really need to do is focus on continuing their advocacy work in between elections. So not just really engaging with voters and making grassroots efforts every time an election rolls around, but continuing to push for things like the Medicaid expansion, for example. Or he also mentioned pushing for bolstering union rights in Wisconsin in between elections.
Often the state's Republican Party has been seen as being very good at doing election stuff, organizing to get the vote out, maybe better than Democrats a lot of the time. Did Wickler or anyone else at the convention talk about sort of that basics of politics type stuff?
That was definitely part of the conversation. I thought it was interesting. The candidate that ran against Wickler is the current state party vice chair and a state representative, David Bowen from Milwaukee. And he was a little bit more critical in his speech in terms of mentioning things that he thinks the party can do better in terms of organizing and getting out the vote and having those grassroots efforts. He said the party has not done very well in getting activists from certain communities to work in those communities during during times of advocacy. He said that the party sometimes, quote unquote, parachutes people in to communities that they're not from. And he said that's a practice that needs to stop. So I think that there certainly is a conversation about the ways in which Democrats have run the party in the past and how those things need to change if they're going to be more successful against the Wisconsin Republican operation that really is a well-oiled machine and a national model for a lot of people in terms of how to get people elected and how to keep them in office.
Let's go back to those state Supreme Court elections at the Republican convention not too long ago. The newly elected Supreme Court Justice Brian Hagedorn spoke in front of Republicans, though it's a nonpartisan seat, thanking them for their help. And we saw, it sounds like, some candidates for the next election speaking to Democrats, again, even though it's a nonpartisan election. What did we hear?
That's right. So this is interesting. There was a little bit of hubbub surrounding candidates coming to state party conventions to address partisan activists because this is a nonpartisan race. But Hagedorn spoke at the GOP convention last month, and the two candidates that are backed by liberals in the Supreme Court race coming up next year both spoke over the weekend. That's Marquette University Law School Professor Ed Falone and Dane County Judge Jill Karofsky. They came on stage, gave brief remarks, and kind of offered, I think, a preview for liberal voters of what their campaigns are going to look like and what sort of issues they're going to be pushing for. Falone was talking about his background. He's a child of immigrants. He said that he's a person who builds bridges and knocks down walls. They both talked about, and Karofsky spent more time on this particular element in her speech, about how the court has become increasingly partisan and how they think that has been detrimental to the highest court in the state. Of course, that's a theme that we've been hearing continuously and a theme that we heard a lot from Judge Lisa Neubauer, who was unsuccessful in her last bid for Supreme Court. So we're going to see how that message kind of evolves over the next several months.
You talked about Governor Evers' speech. He's one high-profile statewide election winner from last year. Also, Senator Tammy Baldwin won pretty handily in November. What did she have to say?
She got a really warm welcome from the convention crowd, of course. She spent a lot of her time talking about health care, which is perhaps pretty unsurprising. That was a really big part of her reelection campaign. That's something that she got a lot more personal about in her last election bid. She talked more about her childhood illness. She talked about her mother's struggle with addiction. And so she spent a lot of time on stage saying that we need to change the healthcare system in this country. She said some health insurance policies in the United States aren't worth, these are her words, aren't worth the paper that they're written on. And she also talked about, and this is something she's talked about for quite a while as well, pushing for legislation to change regulation of prescription drugs in the United States to sort of rein in big pharma, as it's called, and regulate those prices a little more closely.
And as we wrap up, Laurel, a lot of national attention on Wisconsin as a possible deciding state in the presidential race. Did you hear a lot of talk about Wisconsin maybe playing a big role?
Absolutely. I think that was another big theme. If the biggest theme of the weekend was the 2018 elections and kind of celebrating that, the other was, hey, we've got a really big year coming up in 2020. We've got the National Democratic Convention coming to our state. And I kind of lost track of the number of times people said the road to the presidency runs through Wisconsin. and kind of had a little bit of fun saying it literally runs through Wisconsin with a convention coming here. So I think people are really excited within the Democratic Party that this state is going to play such a high-profile role in the next presidential race.
Laurel, thanks a lot for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Rob.
That was Wisconsin Public Radio's state capitol reporter, Laurel White. She joined us to talk about this weekend's state Democratic Party convention and their election of a new party chair. You can follow her coverage and reporting on the Republican convention a weekend or two back. Find it all at WPR.org. Click on the news tab and then go to politics, and it's all there. And keep watching WPR.org for future stories on the elections. Don't you hate it when you lose something and you know it should be there, but you just can't find it? I do. I get a little obsessive when I start trying to track it down. Sometimes I know I should just let it go. It'll turn up later, maybe in a drawer or something. Well, that just happened in Edinburgh, Scotland, except a little later, it was about 200 years after the lost item went missing. As the BBC reports, it all started in 1831 on the Isle of Lewis in Scotland when a buried treasure was found, a chess set made in the 12 or 1300s out of walrus tusk ivory. An almost complete chess set was found, but five pieces were missing, and they haven't been found since. Until a family in Edinburgh opened up a drawer belonging to their late grandfather, an antique dealer. There they found a unique chess piece. Looks like he paid about £5 for it. An expert from an auction house recognized it as one of the missing Lewis Island chessmen. It's going to go up for auction. It's expected to bring in as much as £1 million. But you're wondering, which piece was it on the chess set? It was a warder. A what? A warder, it turns out, is a guy with a helmet, a shield, and a sword, the equivalent of a rook on a modern chessboard. I guess that's the medieval equivalent. Still missing. Three more warders, one night. Maybe open up that drawer, see what you got in there. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network.